Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hub World Podcast. Today's episode will be our 2024 Game Awards Spectacular. My name is Mateo, and today I'm joined by
Gino
and Jules.
Whether you're joining us from YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, be sure to like and subscribe. So, yeah, it's been a while since we recorded and released an episode. It's probably been like around 6 months, I think. It's been a long time.
Been busy playing games.
Well, yeah, it's been since the Summer Nintendo Direct since we recorded an episode. So even though it's going to release at the beginning of 2024, or 2025, it's going to be our 2024 wrap-up, our Game of the Year episode. And unlike the mainstream Game Awards that everyone watches, done by Mr. Jeff Keighley, we chose to do our Game Awards in January so we can reflect on the entire year of games and not put an arbitrary cutoff of like beginning of November, because there was quite a few really high profile games that came out after November like 15th or whatever the heck it was. And we want to actually reflect on the year as an entirety because of that. The Oscars is not in December or November. The Grammys aren't in November. Like, they have their award shows in the new year and they reflect on the year past. And that is just the best way to do an award show, in my opinion. We're going to be doing the same awards that we did for, I believe, last year and maybe the year before that. So we're hoping maybe to get to a little more of a consistent recording schedule now that our crazy lives have calmed down a bit. So hopefully look forward to that in the future. We're going to go now into the list of categories that I have here. And I guess we'll do the same order that we did last year.
Yep.
Let's get the one that you don't want to win at the Hub World Game Awards show. The most disappointing game. Let's reflect on the most disappointing game that you played this year. Or maybe you didn't even need to play it this year. Like, I'm going to start because if you all remember, last year I voted Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League as my most anticipated game of 2024. And oof. I knew back then that I was going to regret saying that, but I did it anyways because I still believed there was a shred of hope that this game was going to turn out. And we played the beta and it wasn't awful, but it wasn't amazing. And then the game came, like, we had the game pre-ordered, and the day the reviews came out, it was getting bombed and bombed and bombed, and Jules and I canceled our pre-orders. And I was laughing at the time, like, I can't believe, like, I said that in the podcast and it happened. Warner Bros. Has stopped supporting this game after season 4 with Deathstroke as the final character, and I literally bought the Digital Deluxe Edition the other day for $5.99 on Xbox.
Still too much.
No, I'm fine paying $6 for the entirety of that game. Like, if it gets delisted one day, it'd be like, well, I have the license for it forever. But
if I buy it, then the Hub World collectively spent $12, which is too much.
After they lost over $200 million on the game, they made $12 on us. So.
Hey, it's okay. It's still not Concord.
Even though I never played the game when it came out, and I still haven't played it in its full form, I think just for the most disappointing game of this year that I did play through its completion had to be Mario & Luigi Brothership. I had a lot of expectation and hope that the Mario & Luigi series, this was like, it's going to be its triumphant return back to, you know, being like a solid like 8 out of 10 RPG. And it, especially coming after like Super Mario RPG Remake and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door for Switch, like, we've had so many Mario RPGs come out, and this game kind of started off strong, but it was like 10 hours too long. Like, the same criticisms I had about like Paper Jam and Dream Team are still here. It's like they didn't learn anything. And I had to basically will myself and push myself through the last 10 hours of that game. And I hate having to do that. And it kind of left with a sour taste in my mouth after playing that game, because like, it looked amazing, the soundtrack's amazing, but it was a slog and I can't overlook it. So that is my real most disappointing winner.
Or would it be loser?
Well, it's a winner here.
It won a bad award.
Yep.
I liked Mario & Luigi, so it doesn't get my award. My award goes to a game that I wouldn't say I held it in high regards, but I held it in decent regards. Like, I thought it was a good game when I originally played it, and its remaster this year proved to me that this game is not worth another play, that it was never actually that good. And that's Luigi's Mansion 2 HD. I was excited to play that game again because I remember liking it on 3DS. I wish they never remade that game. I have nothing but a terrible opinion of that game now. It is not good.
It just feels like a handheld game, like an old handheld game on the contemporary system. Like, the load times are not great in that game, and it's just, they didn't really add anything new to it.
It's uninspired. Like, it's so boring.
You expect Nintendo to, like, add a few bells and whistles in the game, especially if they're charging full price for it. How is that game more expensive than Metroid Prime Remaster, right? Like, Metroid Prime looked like it got way more work in that, and then Luigi's Mansion was just literally just, okay, visual upgrade, but, like, even not having the 3D effect, like, the 3D effect added a lot to that game, in my opinion, and that was so cool, and it's just, you can't replicate that on the Switch, but, like, it's, something's lost by that not being there.
But even without that, just, like, the core gameplay, I had to drag myself through that game. I was bored after an hour.
The episodic format for Luigi's Mansion, personally, I feel like doesn't vibe too well, and that's why I didn't like Dark Moon originally. 3 does a better job of emulating the original, but having different floors made it feel like it was a segmented episodic kind of game versus,
I'm gonna be like, honest, I think we should shut this down now, because I ain't spending the whole podcast debating Luigi's Mansion 2. Ain't the thing. It's just not great. Gina, what's your most disappointing?
My most disappointing, honestly, has to be, I was really looking forward to Destiny this year, and I'm currently not playing it, and it's been a good few months, and Mateo hasn't played for a long, long time, and that's going to be my disappointing game is Destiny 2, The Final Shape. However, not the expansion itself.
I don't know if you can hear my clapping through the mic.
The episodic format, it's just boring. It's just, there's nothing there. Bungie gutted their staff. They also gutted their game. Like, I can't be bothered to log in.
You're gonna hear first, folks. Destiny, the most disappointing game.
Dead game. Yeah. The Final Shape was so good, and it did so much for the story. I was pumped. I was logging in every day. We were all playing. We were not on the, like, we didn't do any of the Race to World First stuff because we knew it was a waste of time. And for those of you in our group of friends that did experience it, it was a waste of time. But it's one of those things where it's just, I'm tired of the gameplay. And, like, as much as I hate to say it, like, Bungie's gameplay is always very good. It's just the gameplay loop is boring now. I don't want to log in to, like, a forever game like Destiny 2. It's however, for our next category, if it's what I think it is, or in one of the future categories, I maybe sounding a little hypocritical, but we'll save that for later. Destiny 2, Final Shape, Echoes, and Revenant, and whatever, disappointing as
we need Jeff Keighley's music in here to cue us off when we start talking.
Yeah.
I believe the next category is the opposite, which is the most presently surprising. What did you go into this year not expecting to be wowed by? Now, I have a clarifying question on this one. Is this one a exclusive to a game that came out in 2024 category, or is this one of the ones where we could potentially mention a game we played for the first time in 2024?
I have a 2024 game that I didn't expect to like, but if you don't have anything, if you want to talk about and share a game, by all means, it doesn't
matter. Okay, because then I have two. And I'll just kind of throw them in quick then. And, like, a game I played this year for the first time that isn't a 2024 game, but it's a 2023 game that I didn't expect to like and was pleasantly surprised by, and I didn't play it in 2023 because I was told it was bad, was Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origins, which was actually fantastic. It consumed me for, like, 2 months.
It took that long to kill Chaos?
Dang.
Yeah. But the thing is, it is by no means an incredible game. It's the same vibe, like, it's Team Ninja, right? It's the same vibe as, like, Hyrule Warriors. Like, it's not the the gameplay depth isn't super big, but, like, you feel badass. There's a lot of content. It's really fun. Like, and I thought it was fun. Like, it felt like almost like a Final Fantasy Warriors game in that kind of, like, sense. So I enjoyed that game. But my real most pleasantly surprising game of the year was a game that was announced at the beginning of the year. Everybody else was hyped about it. I was not hyped about it, and now I'm addicted to it, and that's Pokemon TCG Pocket. Because literally everybody was like, there was so much buzz around this game. When it got announced, people were like, oh, this is so cool. And I was like, who cares? I literally was not gonna. I was not gonna download it. Everybody's like, "Oh, we're gonna download it." I was like, "Ah," and now I'm addicted. So that's my most pleasantly surprising game of the year.
Jules, I'm gonna go after you, and I'm gonna say honestly, I was expecting this game to be good, but I wasn't expecting this game to be as good as it was when I was playing it, and that's Sonic and Shadow Generations. I knew it was going to be good because I knew Sonic Generations is great. I'm like, oh, they're just going to add a few levels with Shadow. It's not going to be all that much. And I kind of stayed away from the hype cycle of this game. And when I played it, I'm like, holy crap. And I didn't play it on the Xbox or the PlayStation. I have it on PC and I'm like, wow, this is great. I had it on my big monitor. I had it in 144 hertz if I could get it to run on certain levels. But I played it at a solid 60 frames, beautiful resolution. On PC, this game is great.
Me, it's kind of like the same sort of vibe as both of your picks. Like, this game had a lot of hype going into its release, especially by you two, but I had no interest in playing this game, and that was Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I'd like to preface this, I never played Final Fantasy VII Remake. I just wanted to be part of the moment with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I played, and I think I was the second one in the Hub World group to actually finish this game, and you guys made fun of me about how I played the game wrong and whatever, but like, I did all of Queen's Blood, I did all the side quests, like I did so many things in this game. I love this game, and now I'm gonna go back in the next few months and go and play Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like, this was literally my first Final Fantasy game ever. I've never played a game in the series before, and it's not like I've now become a Final Fantasy fan. It's just, no, I just like Final Fantasy VII, and I've never played even a game like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, like one of those like turn-based action RPGs or whatever. And for a long time, it was like, oh, this game was like the best game I played this year. And I'm probably going to talk about it a bit more in this episode, but like, I was just blown away by this game, the scope of it. And like, I knew the story of Final Fantasy VII, but like the way that there was always twists and turns to that. And like, it was just a great experience from beginning to end. Like, I do not regret a single thing about playing this game. Like, it was that good.
I believe the next category is best DLC/expansion. Now, I'm going to start by saying I only played one DLC this year. And while I enjoyed it, I don't actually want to mention it in this category because I don't think it was worth giving an award to. And I also don't think that I should be speaking on an award that I only have one contender for. So I'm going to politely decline adding to this category myself.
Gino, are you going to nominate Final Shape?
No, I'm not. I am going to nominate World of Warcraft, The War Within. Because yes. Delves are great. Bran is my best friend. And when the launch happened, Joe and I were playing. We did a lot of the War Within stuff. We were doing the Delves. I got my heroic gear. I played through the season and everything. World of Warcraft has been really popping off, at least in the early months of the expansion. Things have kind of slowed down a bit. I think the next patch is going to be coming out soon where we're going to be going to another area. But I'm probably going to skip this next patch coming up because I'm playing a bunch of other stuff right now. But War Within, the first patch and the launch of that expansion was absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, it brought back my love of WoW. And this was an example of my forever games popping off at the right moments. And the extra content and things like that didn't suck the life out of it. So good job, Blizzard, I guess.
Yeah, and my best DLC of the year was the Splatoon 3 Side Order campaign, and as is the tradition with like Nintendo's Splatoon campaigns, like post Splatoon 2, this was fantastic. It was like a roguelike adventure where like you had multiple options of difficulty to approach the path, and depending on how hard of a difficulty route you chose, you get better rewards. So like you can make some really cool builds with a bunch of different weapons that and give yourself different supers and all these things. Like power level can change, your swimming speed can change. There was the boss fight at the end of the campaign was fantastic, which is always like something to look forward to in a Splatoon campaign. The story was pretty good for the most part. Like everyone picked Chaos at the end of Splatoon 2 in the final Splatfest. So this was kind of like the order, what if order sort of route that I guess the game would have gone down if that would have won. And like just adding color back into this white drab world was really cool. I just really, really, really enjoyed it. And just doing a run and the run is different every single time you do it is really refreshing too. So yeah, this was my favorite expansion or DLC in the year. I didn't play that many, but like this was the one that stood out to most to me. So I will go with the Splatoon Side Order. The next category is a pretty decent one this year. There's a lot of choice, in my opinion. The best remaster.
Just to clarify this one, so that we can like be clear about what it means. This category is for something that is classified as a gameplay like remaster, as in like you're not looking at something like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth that is a remake,
yes,
in a sense, yeah, but is a brand new game. We're looking at things, yeah, that are like functionally the same game, but maybe got like, it maybe was remastered or maybe it was rebuilt from the ground up. But again, like from a gameplay perspective, is the same game, like anything like that.
Yes.
I'd like to start this one off actually, because I would have picked Persona 3 Reload, but the music was great. Characters are awesome. Tartarus sucks, and I can't pick it for that reason. I'm going to go with Paper Mario just because it's a nostalgia pick. The music is great. The levels are great. The characters are awesome. It's not nearly as difficult as I remember it was back on the GameCube, but it's an easy portable way to have this game, and I really feel like this is the way that Mario RPG should be going forward.
Paper Mario was also my choice, and this was like, for us at least, this was always like a break glass in like time of emergency type game for Nintendo, and it finally came out. Like the game looks incredible, but the soundtrack has like the classic soundtrack and the new soundtrack. I adore the original game soundtrack, but I found myself listening to the new soundtrack way more, and it's just as fantastic as the other one. And even like, yeah, like you said, you know, like it wasn't as difficult as I remember, and the quality of life upgrades that they did put in the game really had a chance to shine. The writing is a little different, but like I'm indifferent to the changes that they made in the writing. Like it's still just as funny and entertaining as it was before, but I just can't get over how good the game looks. It looked fantastic on the GameCube, but the new like modern Paper Mario art style, where like you can really tell exactly what everything is made of, similar to like a modern Yoshi games, like Paper Mario had that. And I really just hope that the game sold really well for a Paper Mario game, and it got critical acclaim when this game came out again. I just really hope that Nintendo finally realizes and sees what the fans want, and that the series can stay this way, and they don't have to make some garbage sticker nonsense game that no one cares about. Like, this is how people want Paper Mario, and just keep it that way, because this was the best received game literally since the last time it came out. This was like hands down my favorite remaster of the year. Like, it's, yeah, such a special game. Play it.
Yeah, and I just echo it. It's mine. I can't really add anymore. It was amazing. I like the little bits of new content. I love the redone tracks. It's just perfect.
So moving on, the next category is our very favorite near and dear category, the Elden Ring Best RPG. There was a lot of RPGs that came out this year, guys. Which one do you think is worthy of being named the 2024 Elden Ring Best RPG?
It's easy. It's Balatro.
Ah, okay. Tell us more.
It's a great card game. Wasn't expecting it to be, the gameplay to be like as, I guess, deep as it was. Yes, you're picking cards, but it really makes you like think of what type of different strategies, and you have to constantly be adjusting your stuff to get better combos, more chips, more multipliers, things like that as you're going. I've still only cleared the game once on one deck, but I am terrible at the game, but I also love it because it's quick and easy. So yeah, Balatro for me.
My Elden Ring Best RPG of the Year award has to go to Sonic Rumble, the mobile game. I think it gives you lots of options to play in the role of various Sonic characters, such as Big the Cat and Jet the Hawk and Tikal. And I think that its gameplay, much like Elden Ring, is so foundational to the RPG genre that I could think of no other game this year that best represented the Elden Ring Best RPG of the Year award.
Very, very, very solid choice, Jules. For me, it's a series that is near and dear to my heart. It's the newest entry in that series. It's an annual series, so you can tell how incredibly quality the fine developer is, Electronic Arts, and the amount of energy that they put into this series. For me, it has to be NHL 25. I've played literally every single NHL game since NHL, I think, 2009. That was on the 360. And yeah, just they put so much work into that, this game this time around. If you're a huge hockey fan like I am, you'd love the fine RPG mechanics that are in this game. Everything about it, the visuals, the soundtrack. Oh, you, NHL is known to have fantastic soundtracks.
What about the character creator?
Gino, yes. How could I forget about that? The character creator this time around is way more in depth than it was in the previous 10 entries that I played. It's not anywhere near the same as NHL 24 was. And yeah, like, I play the general manager mode where I can build my team however I want. And when I get to see my team on the ice and get them to win a Stanley Cup, it's one of the most gratifying experiences I ever have in a video game. And I get to do that year after year after year. I just love NHL 25, and it's one of the best RPGs I've played in a very, very, very long time. So, and as a diehard Vancouver Canucks fan, Quinn Hughes is on the box art. So it's another nice little cherry on the top of what a fantastic game that is. So NHL 25, guys, you want a good RPG to sink your teeth into, you can put hundreds of hours into this one.
All great Elden Ring RPGs. Now to move on to categories that matter. Best soundtrack. I'll open, and yep, this one isn't even a competition for me. Anytime there's a Final Fantasy game that comes out, it has the best soundtrack. And I will say that against Zelda. I will say that against everything. Final Fantasy music can't be compared to anything else in gaming, in my opinion. And Final Fantasy VII has the most iconic music. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has some of the best tracks I've ever heard in my entire life. Just listening to the soundtrack is an experience. So there's no other game, not just this year, but maybe even this decade, that I would compare the music to Rebirth. Like, Rebirth has incredible music.
Yeah, I also pick Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I don't have that previous attachment to any Final Fantasy game like you guys have, and I only know, like, a few key songs from Final Fantasy VII, so, like, a lot of this soundtrack was actually new to me, and the arrangements were just incredible. Like, Promises to Keep, the Aerith song, that is low-key, like, incredible song. But yeah, that song is incredible, and I remember hearing it at the Game Awards. I think it was presented there as like a teaser for the game last year, and that was the live performance by the singer of the song, and I'm like, wow, this is great. I'll never play that game, but that's a great song, and I ended up playing the game, and the moment that plays is fantastic. And just the soundtrack in this game is incredible. Like you said, Jules, it's one of the best I've ever heard, so it has to be that.
I guess I'll be a little bit different because, yes, I found the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth soundtrack very, very good. The only song I can really think of is like the main battle theme or the main theme. But I have to say that a bunch of songs that are even like stuck in my head to this day got to come from Persona 3 Reload. The music in that game was great. It's what kept me going through the endless slog of Tartarus. The battle theme was great. The real world areas to explore. And I love the music for the Persona series. It's been great.
One that we can actually probably talk about this year as opposed to other years, best multiplayer.
I was torn on this one.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'll let you guys go first.
It's literally the game that I just got off playing prior to this podcast, and it's the game that I'm going to go back to playing after this podcast. It's Marvel Rivals. Like, Marvel Rivals single-handedly resurrected the, in my opinion, dead hero shooter genre. Like, the hero shooter genre after, in my opinion, the complete utter failure of Overwatch 2 and the undisputable complete utter failure that was Concord. Completely, just like, it's like we're back in 2015 at Overwatch's prime, and we have Marvel now as the characters in this game, and it's doing everything that Overwatch 2 should have been. Like, it is that game, in my opinion, and it's gonna carry the torch for whoever knows how long. They're doing all the right things. They're giving you the characters all when they come out. The microtransactions aren't awful compared to Overwatch 2. Like, it's a little bit better compared to it, but it's free. You can have a blast playing. The hero choices are really varied compared to what you would expect there to be in a Marvel game. And a lot of the leaked characters that have been announced are really exciting. So just, it's an addictive multiplayer, and we literally go to like to 2 a.m. playing this game for like the last few days, and I've not regretted it one bit.
Honestly, I would not be shocked if we have a Marvel Rivals focused podcast very early in our 2025
lineup.
Definitely could have one easily.
Well, Mateo, you forgot to mention how the battle passes don't expire either, so there's no FOMO for this.
I mean, they do if you don't buy them.
Yeah, but like if you have them, you can go back to them and keep earning stuff, right? So like if I go out and buy a season pass and life gets in the way, right? I can come back and finish that in a later season.
Yeah, even at the end of the season, like you're at the end of the season, you're like, oh, I didn't really play enough, but I kind of like some of these rewards. I'd like to get them later in life. You could just buy it then and then just make sure you can do it later on.
Honestly, this is my choice also. Mateo pretty much hit all the nails.
Yeah, it's my choice as well. If I'm being honest, we all love Overwatch at a point in time, no longer. And therefore, the void has been there to be filled by something better. And this is better. And I think that the devs are making the right choices. They're not catering to the top 1% of players. They are trying to keep fun at the core. They are really trying to give you options. They are trying to change things up. There's a lot of content. They're being very forgiving with their microtransactions. Like, it has a good economy. Like, I really enjoy the game. But I will mention that the game that almost pulled me from this one was Super Mario Party Jamboree, which, in my opinion, is the best original Mario Party since the GameCube era. I'm not going to say much about that game. That's a good old sit down, have some fun. We've had a blast with Mario Party. We always do. And I think there's some really cool variety in this version of it. But it's still got to go to Marvel Rivals.
The one thing about Mario Party Jamboree I'd like to say is that, like, for once, I'm interested in playing the side modes in a Mario Party game, because especially the rhythm one, that one was a blast when we played it. The Koopathalon, even, like, I'm a big fan of the Koopathalon. I think it's pretty solid as a game mode. Just Nintendo disrespecting Diddy Kong, I can't live with that. But there's other people that who knows what Diddy's future is going to be in future Nintendo games, because people are slandering his name. For another big category, we have best narrative. And I'd like to start off with this one. For me, it's Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I adore Machine Games as a developer. They've never made a bad game, in my opinion, that they've solely developed themselves. Because Wolfenstein Youngblood, yeah, they helped with that game, but it was also being developed with another studio. And it was not really what you would want out of a Wolfenstein game. But once again, they didn't have complete control over that because they were working on this game. But yeah, the story of Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is on par, if not better, than the vast majority of the Indiana Jones films. It's that good. And even all the little secrets that are hidden in notes, that are hidden in pictures that you take, that are hidden in just dialogue that you hear from characters around you in the game, it really builds a compelling narrative. And I really think that after the utter failure that was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and the lesser failure that Dial of Destiny was, the future of this franchise should be in video games, because the storytelling can be really, really fleshed out. And if the Great Circle is anything to go by, and if that's the type of bar that we're going to get from an Indiana Jones game, they should just keep making them, because they are the story and the narrative in this game was that good. All the characters are really compelling. There was a really compelling side character that was your companion, Gina. Voss was a phenomenal villain, like one of the best Indiana Jones villains, in my opinion. The whole mystery about the Great Circle was really, really, really good. And watching Gino play it the other day, he was blown away by that big twist in the game. Everything about this game really hit, but I think the story is what really like propelled it into something that was really special, in my opinion. So, and you get bits of story everywhere in this game.
Oh, there's a ton of foreshadowing stuff. If you're like, if you pay attention to like little things that are happening, even when you're doing the intro, there's little bits, like you're walking around in the first major area and there's like, you'll hear bits of news on the radio or find a newspaper clipping of what's happening in places that are also going to be explorable in one way or another later on. And as I'm going back and redoing all the collectibles and everything for this game. It's, I'm noticing that now. I'm like, holy cow, how did I miss that? And it's my pick too, by the way.
Yeah, and yeah. This game, it's set 1 year after Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is the second Indiana Jones movie for those. It's the first that came out, but it's the second canonically for those that have never watched an Indiana Jones movie. But like, they reference things that have happened before it. They've even referenced like the Disneyland ride, which is really cool. Oh my god,
that was such a good Easter egg.
And they reference characters that appear in films after this canonically. So like, it's really, really just, as if you're an Indiana Jones fan and haven't played this game, I don't know what you're doing. You need to play this game. Like, if you even if you're not a fan of Indiana Jones, but respect the icon of Indiana Jones, like he's a pop culture icon. If you have any sort of semblance of attachment to that, you need to play this game because it's that fantastic.
Lara Croft and Nathan Drake wish they were Indiana Jones.
Yes.
This game took the wonderful format of both of those types of games, like the Tomb Raider, archaeology,
we'll get into
just
that
treasure game, hunter.
We're talking about the narrative, though.
Oh my, no, it's just the story of this game is absolutely fantastic. It's, yeah, there's a bright future here for Indiana Jones. Very well done. Great story.
I look forward to playing it. It is not my narrative of the year, as I did not play it. And I will just keep it short and sweet. The narrative of the year for me is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Because unlike most of the internet, I like the changes. And I like the meta-narrative that is happening simultaneous to the relived narrative. And I am excited to see how it concludes in Part 3. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right. The next one we have here is Best Art Style. There's actually a lot of really good potential games here, in my opinion. But I'm going to go back to Marvel Rivals with this one. I just love the hand-drawn sort of like aesthetic that game has, like the anime-influenced character models and the world of that game. It's like, even when they do like the animation at the beginning of the game, like it's so fantastic and just well-designed. You know that Thor is Thor, Cap is Cap, Iron Man's Iron Man, but like they're designs of these characters you've never seen before. And I really like how they also, with the skins, they added like the more traditional appearances or the movie versions or the TV show versions of these characters. And like, they hit the nail on the head. Like, when a hero based shooter is only good as the character designs are, and especially the game being in third person, you can always appreciate the way your character looks and the way that you interact in the world. And that is such a key thing that this game has that Overwatch didn't. And I was a little bit apprehensive of it at first, but it was the right decision. And in hindsight, like, I think Overwatch would have been a lot better if it was that way too. But yeah, I just think the art style is phenomenal and the art direction in that game is phenomenal.
And again, I'm echoing Mateo because my pick was also Marvel Rivals. I love the way that game looks. It's just an instant classic with like a lot of these hero skins. Like, as Mateo was saying before, like the new outfits that they've given to each of the characters and even the season pass ones as well. Like, just by looking at them, I know Hela is Hela, even though I've only ever like really experienced her in the movie. That outfit screams, yes, I'm the goddess of the underworld. Or when I'm looking at Iron Man, it looks like Iron Man. It's comfortable, it's nostalgic, and like, it's instantly recognizable. Like, even Wolverine, he's just wearing a yellow jacket, and like, you know,
that one's not a good skin, but that
I'm
one,
just
yeah,
I'm just
I,
saying
I,
though,
I
but like
but,
I
know what you
I,
mean.
But just at looking at Wolverine, you know it's Wolverine. Right, even though the movie skin one is better.
Mine I'm actually giving to a game that I don't actually think was that strong of a game, but the art style is what ultimately pulled me to the game, and I did find that the art style was consistent throughout. I did enjoy the game, but I think that this is the only category I would ever praise it in. But I do find that this is one of my gripes with the main Jeff Keighley Game Awards, is I do find that the way that they approach the Game Awards is, here are our big games this year, and they're the only things that really get nominated in all these categories. And I hate that. I hate that, like, a game could be like a 7 out of 10 in most capacities, but still be the most impressive visually, and they don't give that game recognition. Anyway, my best art style is The Plucky Squire. I was excited about this game from when it was announced. I played it. I mostly enjoyed it. Not incredible, but good. But the art style is incredible. Like that's what pulled me to the game. Like, it's a moving storybook, and the storybook characters jump out into like a 3D landscape. Like, it was a really, really impressive art style, and it was super unique. Like, it hasn't really been done before, so I really liked that capacity of it.
Oh, that's actually a game that I'm looking forward to playing. It's just, it doesn't feel right though buying it if it's at its normal price, and like, it's the thing, like, if it becomes half price, I'll pick it up in a heartbeat. And it's made by one of the former designers at Game Freak, who designed so many Pokemon from like between generation 5 and generation 9. So I'm really interested in it, just from that regard too. But moving on, we have our next category, which is best level design. Would anyone like to start that one?
Yes. I feel like I haven't really like talked too much about this game yet, but I'm just looking at some of my future picks and stuff, and I'm probably gonna be talking about it a lot, and that's Path of Exile 2, the early access. Yes, we only have the first three acts of the game right now, but I feel like every act of the game has a distinct base kind of area. Like, the first act is you're kind of like in a forest heading towards a town. The second act, you're in this like desert canyon-y kind of area, and then the third act, it's like an Aztec rainforest. And within each of those areas, there's a bunch of different sub areas. Like, there's like a thorny jungle, or a crypt, and a like graveyards, caves, badlands, mesas, and a bunch of different things. Like, I was not expecting the level design of PoE2 to like rock that hard, and it was absolutely amazing, because like, it's a game where you're running around exploring a randomly generated map, and all of the randomly generated maps and all of the randomly generated terrain and everything within those areas is absolutely phenomenal. Everything meshes together. Everything works seamlessly. I feel like the level design was absolutely great in that.
Jules, did you want to go next?
Yeah, I mean, I think mine, Sonic X Shadow Generations, specifically Shadow Generations. Sonic has gone through so many different iterations, and I think I've spoken a lot about my love for the like adventure style games and the classic games. Boost gameplay games don't actually, in my opinion, have a lot of greatness in terms of level design. Really, I just think Unleashed was the only one that really had solid level design, and maybe Sonic Generations, like I think half of the Sonic Generations levels. Shadow Generations was phenomenal. Like, every single level in that game was incredible. So well designed. So, like, captured the essence of the game it came from, pushed it to make it feel like epic. Like, and I really, really felt that way when I played the Sonic Forces level, because I was like, wow, I'm hyped about Sonic Forces. I'm like, this is what Sonic Forces should have been. Like, this is like, like, Sonic Forces had a really cool concept of, like, an Eggman-ridden, like, world. And it didn't really do it well. But that, like, Shadow Generations was fantastic. And I think that the way that they approached the level design was ultimately what made it as good as it was. Including the DLC episode based off of the movie.
I gotta play that still. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to getting my hands-on next year, probably, or I guess this year as of the time you're listening to this. But for me, level design is Astrobot. Astrobot, I think, is one of the best 3D platformers ever made, and every level really has its own identity, and that is something that is very important to any platformer. And the power-ups in that game are fantastic as well. Like, I just really think that even like the really hard challenges, it might be just me sucking at games, but I thought that those were really, really well made as well. I have to play the post-release level that they did as well, but like PlayStation Anniversary, like homage episodes or levels that they did, those were really fun. Those were a blast. I love those, and they really got the DNA of each series that they were acknowledging. Going from the Astro's Playroom demo that you got with the PS5 to this, it's just night and day. It's just like they did everything that I could have wanted a more expansive version of that to be like, and I was just blown away by it, honestly. Like, it is such a fantastic game, and just everything was just so refreshing. Now we're gonna head to another one that I think has a lot of really big contenders is best performance. Which actor or actress do you think gave the best performance of this year in a video game? For me, it's just hands down, it's Troy Baker as Indiana Jones. Like, he did a phenomenal impression of Harrison Ford, not just his voice, but his mannerisms, because they mocap Troy Baker also. And just like the way, like, Indiana Jones even like moves his hand when he's talking, or like when you hear how he cowers when he sees a snake in the game, just like Harrison Ford said it himself at the Game Awards in his potentially drunken state. Like, if I knew this guy was this good, I would have come in and done it myself, because he didn't want to be one-upped by Troy Baker. And like, as a performance as Indiana Jones, as much as I love Harrison Ford, like, Troy Baker probably may have given the best performance of Indiana Jones, period, in this game. It was that good. And like, there's a lot of other actors and actresses in that game that did a fantastic job, but like, everything about that performance was spectacular. And if only this game was actually nominated and eligible for the Game Awards, he probably would have won. And I think he knows that, because they brought him out onto the stage anyways to be part of the show.
I'm echoing Mateo also on this one. Troy Baker was absolutely phenomenal. And there were times when I was going through the game and I heard his delivery of certain lines and I'm like, this isn't Harrison Ford. It was so uncanny, but so uniquely him also. Like, it was a great casting all in all. I'm lost for words. It was great.
And that's why I say, like, honestly, the performance of Troy Baker is why I say the future, like, one of the main reasons why I say the future of this franchise should be in video games, because you're never going to replicate or find an actor that looks like Harrison Ford that can do exactly what Harrison Ford did in the movies, especially in the first three. So voice acting and games, like, you can just get a sound alike like Troy Baker and just, or make the character look like the way he did in the movies and just go that way. Like, his performance as Indiana Jones was crucial. It was honestly, that was probably the most important thing they had to nail in this game, is to cast the right actor to play Indiana Jones. And they did it. And yeah, this is honestly, it could even be one of his best performances in a game, period. Like, Troy Baker was phenomenal in this game.
Mine is going to go to Brianna White in her role of Aerith in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I think that anybody who knows Final Fantasy VII knows that Rebirth was going to include one of the most iconic moments in gaming tied to that character. And Brianna, from the first game, has done a really great job of making people fall in love with Aerith and this iteration of Aerith. And just her performance throughout the game, just, it makes all those emotional moments so much harder. And I think she really should be recognized for how well, like, on a lot of the voice casts in the Final Fantasy VII Remake series should be commended for how well they're portraying characters. However, she specifically deserves the award this year, so I'm going to give that to her.
Moving forward here, we have best gameplay.
I will open, because I have, in a way, I feel like I have a very boring selection of games this year, because once again, my winner in this category is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Dang.
It was the funnest game I played this year. I went nuts. I did, like, literally everything. I feel like I fully understood the combat, unlike when I played Remake, where I feel like I got myself through it. And I played it a few times, but I don't think I invested as much into the depth of the combat as I did in this one. And I had a blast, from all the stupid little mini games to all the, like, massively insane, like, combat challenges, to just, like, running around the world, to getting really, really competitive in Queen's Blood. Like, there was just so much variety in gameplay in that game. Like, that, I think that's what blew me away about that game, is it's not just the narrative, it's not just the core gameplay that's good, but, like, they put a lot of heart into how much variety there is. And I know a lot of people don't love that there's so many mini games, but I think that was what made the game so stand out for me, is I actually felt like, while the side missions themselves weren't always the most interesting, there were so many mini games and gameplay elements in that game that it really feels like they took everything, like, seriously, and they put, like, heart into it, and they really captured what Final Fantasy is about. Like, and so I just really appreciated that aspect of it.
Gino, do you want to go next?
Action RPGs have been honestly one of those types of games that I never really found myself too interested in. I dabbled a little bit when like Minecraft Dungeons first came out. Then again when Diablo came to the Nintendo Switch, a little bit more when Diablo 4 came out, but PoE just sank its hooks into me. And there would be times during the day when I was at work and I'm like, I should be leveling my monk right now. Like I gotta get through it so I can get to the end game stuff and play through all of that. I've taken a bit of a break recently because of Indiana Jones, and I want to finish the Indiana Jones 100% before I go back on the PoE treadmill and keep going. But yeah, I just finished Cruel Mode Act 2. I'm just about to start Cruel Mode Act 3. I'm level like 60 something on my monk, and it's just super fun. Everything blends into it. The class I'm playing is essentially the avatar, and it's just great. Monk is great, lightning is fun, and everyone should play PoE. It is the greatest thing ever. Thank you, Joe, for making this recommendation. Why the hell didn't I not play PoE 1 when it first came out? Is what I find myself asking myself a lot. I should have been playing PoE right from the beginning. It's great.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if I nominated Final Fantasy VII Rebirth as best gameplay, even though like I had no idea what I was doing that entire game?
Yes, it would be funny.
I'm not going to do that. I just thought that would be hilarious. Like that thought came through my mind right now.
I think you should still tell the listeners how you played that game.
I had no idea what I was doing. Like I didn't even bother leveling up weapons. As soon as I saw like, oh, this weapon has better stats.
He didn't even heal. This.
I did heal, but
he didn't know that you could learn abilities from the weapons, which is not the worst thing, because I did that in my first playthrough of Remake as well. It's not, you still played the game. You still got the game.
Yeah. I didn't hit a wall until the final boss in that game. I didn't hit a wall. Like I didn't repeatedly die until that point. And the only reason I died repeatedly is because I didn't have a lot of really key weapon abilities. So I couldn't like stagger the enemy quickly, and I would like literally have to exhaust every resource I had so I could beat the final boss. And I thought that's hilarious. If I had to like know the RPG mechanics and systems really deeply, I wouldn't have gotten that far in the game anyways. Like I just went into like completely oblivious, and I think that was fantastic. But like my actual nomination though is Astro Bot again. Very similar to level design. Like there's so many different abilities Astro has in this game, and it's really amplified by like the way the controller feels and the rumble, the sound effects, and like it's just so engaging, and I never got tired of that game. If I missed something earlier in a level, I would be completely fine using my abilities going back, because I get to experience the depth of the sounds and the controllers, like feedback and things like that. Like the boss battles were super easy, but like I didn't want anything more than that. And like I said about the anniversary levels, like those were fantastic as well. And just like, the game is exactly what I wanted it to be, and the gameplay is a huge part of that, because they knew what they did right with Astro's Playroom. It was a fantastic tech demo, and they just refined that, and that was perfect. And it got challenging when you did the challenge modes. Like the base game wasn't that challenging, and if you wanted to do be a completionist like I am, then you got your challenge. It's very similar to Kirby in that regard, in my opinion. Like Kirby is a fun, relaxing experience where you're smiling the entire time and you're having a great time with it. But then if you want to go for that 100%, then that's where you're going to have a little bit more difficulty. And it was the perfect formula for that, in my opinion. And it really, you could feel that the developers had a blast making this game. The game was so full of energy, and I just loved it. I don't need to have a 100-hour game every single time I play. Like Astro Bot was just refreshing, and you could play as little or as much as you want and just have a blast doing it. So Astro Bot was my favorite gameplay of the year. And now looking forward to 2025, or what could potentially come out this year. 2025 has a lot of potential, a lot of stuff we know, but there's quite a bit of stuff we don't know, especially coming from Nintendo. But of the stuff that is currently announced as of the day of recording, which is December 30th, 2024, what is your most anticipated game of 2025.
I don't care that it is not formally announced. I am still saying this is my most anticipated game. Mario Kart 9 is my most anticipated game of 2025. I don't care that it has not been formally announced. I know it has to exist. I know it must exist. I know it must be coming with the new Switch 2 launch. It has to be there. And the thought of it, to me, is insane. However, I do know I should also say a game that we know will come out in 2025. And honestly, it's Pokemon Legends ZA for me. I love Legends Arceus. And I'm very excited about more Pokemon. Like, I am really, really excited about some of the other games that are coming out as well. But I know Legends ZA is going to be one of those games that, like, I'm going to just sink myself into. And I haven't had a game that I've sunk myself into like this since Rebirth now. And I know some of the other games I'm excited for this year, while I'm excited for them, they're going to be more of a, like, I do the campaign, I'm done. I'm excited for shiny hunting and doing all the quests and all the stuff that goes with a Pokemon game. So that's my most anticipated right now of the announced games.
My most anticipated will be the complete and full release of PoE2 when it comes out of early access. Right now we only have access to half the game, the first three acts. The second three acts will be coming on the full release, I believe, as well as six other character classes. Like, basically everything that's in the game right now is only half the game. And by today's standards, half the game is a full game. So I'm looking forward to the full release.
How could a game be nominated for categories in 2024, but be your 2025 most anticipated game? Now, I'm not trying to argue
it's not the full release. It's not the full release. The PoE2, as it is right now, is the early access. And it's a fully fleshed out game.
Okay. It's your answer. I'm not...
It's like a patch or something, right? Like, if you were playing, like, for instance, like, if this was just, say, if Destiny was good, right, the next expansion can be your most anticipated thing coming up, right? Final Shape was very anticipated.
Yeah.
Right?
Fair.
Playing the early access, it feels like a full game, but it's not the full game. It's only half the game.
You have to explain for the listeners at home like me who don't know, but that's, yeah. I appreciate the explanation. Continue, Mateo.
Yeah, like, I'm torn between two. I definitely am very excited about Pokemon Legends ZA because I love the Kalos region. Generation 6 is a really, like, special generation of Pokemon to me, but I would be kicking myself if I didn't mention Metroid Prime 4. Metroid Prime 4 is, like, again, like what Paper Mario Thousand Year Door was, it's the emergency games that, like, I say emergency because, like, it's not, Nintendo's in the best shape it's ever been in their existence, but, like, as in, like, this is one of those games that they could always pull out that they know that the fans would just eat up because it is, like, a game from a very beloved series, critically acclaimed, and, like, Metroid Prime was revolutionary when it came out. And if Metroid Prime Remastered didn't come out last year, I probably wouldn't say Metroid Prime 4 because, like, I forgot how good Metroid Prime was. And it took the remaster and me playing it again to realize, like, holy crap, this is, like, one of those, like, generational, super influential games that Nintendo made. Like, it's on the same level of, like, importance to me as Mario 64, as Ocarina of Time. Like, it's that important of a game to video game history. Even, like, Indiana Jones has made me excited for Metroid Prime because there's a lot of Metroid Prime type elements in Indiana Jones, like how Indiana Jones, like, the camera is essentially how scanning works in Metroid Prime. Like, you take a picture of something and you get lore based on that. And I'm just all about that now. Like, that's my new favorite thing. Like, I really, really want to go and play, like, Metroid Prime 2 and 3 again, but I feel like those games eventually will be released on Switch or Switch 2. But, like, Retro Studios is making it. A few, like, key members of the staff have come back to Retro to work on 4. And the trailer we saw was fantastic. The character animations and the visuals were really impressive. And I'm just so excited to go back into that world of Samus and, like, just be a badass. Like, realistically, if we knew that a new 3D Mario was coming out, or if we knew if a new Zelda game was coming out or something like that along those lines, like, I would obviously pick that. I'm more excited about what's to come and what we're going to find out when the Switch 2 gets unveiled. But if I had to condense it to just one game right now, it would be Metroid Prime 4. So knowing that Nintendo has all these secrets that they've yet to unveil to us, that's the most exciting thing for 2025 for me. Next up, we have, what is the best game you played for the very first time in 2024. So this is not a game that you played this year. That's a new game. It's what's a game that you had on your backlog or whatever that really stood out to you? I actually would like to start with this one because 2024 was a year I really didn't knock a lot of games off my backlog. And I was really surprised by that when I was reflecting on my year. And really, the only game I did play, and I feel comfortable enough to nominate this game for this one, but it was the first game I beat this year, which was Sonic Unleashed. I never beat that game because Gino played through that game when we were kids. And when he was done with it, we just traded it in. And I never got to finish it myself. And like, I maybe got 5 hours into the game. I don't remember anything beyond that. And if it was the original version of Sonic Unleashed, I would not be nominating it whatsoever. But the Xbox Series X enhanced version of this really made a huge difference in the game. The load times and the frame rate are so much better in this. Like, there's no frame rate dips at all. And the load times are like non-existent, honestly. So, and like, I've always had the opinion that the Werehog wasn't that bad. And I've kind of feel an odd sense of nostalgia towards the Werehog, especially after playing this game. And the boost gameplay is fantastic in this game. It really hasn't aged poorly at all. And just playing through Rooftop Run, like, which is one of my favorite levels in Sonic history, like, period, in that buttery smooth frame rate is just phenomenal. And you can only get that experience on Xbox right now. And I think Sega would be really, really smart to let other players on other platforms experience that, because it would be fantastic. And you could add a lot of content to Sonic Unleashed. Like, they could make a lot of fixes too to that game, and it would be even better. So I'm looking at my list. It's either this or like the 3DS version of Sonic Generations. And this was just a way better experience than that, to the point where like I legitimately enjoyed myself. I legitimately enjoyed every minute I played of Sonic Unleashed.
Mine is kind of funny because it's a game I still haven't finished. And it's a game that I started in 2024. I'm like 90% done, but I got distracted by a bunch of other games. And that's Baldur's Gate 3. I'm in the final act. I'm running around in like the last portion of the game. I know I'm in the end game. It's just I haven't gone back to finish it yet. I am getting a bit of an itch for D&D soon. So hopefully once I'm done with what I want to do with PoE, I will go back and finish Baldur's Gate 3, the 2023 game of the year that I started in 2024, that I will finish in 2025. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I finally got around to playing the Final Fantasy Pixel Remasters this summer and was able to finish playing the Final Fantasy games that I haven't played. So it was a big Final Fantasy year for me.
Until.
Surprise to no one, Final Fantasy IV is as good as they say. And it was probably one of my favorite games this year. Definitely the best game that I played for the first time this year. After playing Final Fantasies 1 through 5 for the first time, I did find that 4 was the best one, although I really enjoyed some of the other ones. I didn't really play a lot of other games for the first time this year. Really, the only other games that I played that weren't Final Fantasy, like literally, like I'm looking at my list of games that I played for the first time this year, and it was Final Fantasy 1 through 5, Final Fantasy 14, Strangers of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origins, and then Minecraft and Elden Ring. Those are the two non-Final Fantasy games that I played this year for the first time.
So you're picking Minecraft. Okay.
I'm not picking Minecraft.
Ooh.
I would have picked Minecraft had the tail end of the 1 week that I played Minecraft not ended with one of our friends burning down everything we made because he was mad that Gino went and stole a book out of his home. So
that he couldn't even use.
That he couldn't use. But it was fun.
I was going to put it back.
Final Fantasy IV was definitely my favorite game that I played for the first time this year.
So before we get to our final award, which is Game of the Year, does anyone want to talk just briefly about any games that you really loved that came out this year that didn't necessarily make the cut on any of your awards?
I mean, you've mentioned some of the ones, like Persona 3 Reload is something I really enjoyed this year, and Astrobot as well. But, I mean, you guys have talked about those, so I'm not going to reopen those ones. But I think, like, the one that I really do want to mention, that I really did enjoy this year, and had it not been such a big, like, year for Final Fantasy for me, and Sonic and stuff like that, it may have been higher, but I really, really loved The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. It was a really, really good game.
I actually think it's like one of my favorite 2D Zelda games. It was so unique. My expectations for the game were kind of like cautiously optimistic, but realistically at the floor. I did really think it was just going to be one of those late system, like experimental, kind of like half-assed games. But nope, it was a full-on Zelda game. It was fantastic. A lot of heart, a lot of option, a lot of polish. I really, really enjoyed that game.
Mm-hmm. I would have nominated it for something, Jules, but the menus were just awful. But yeah, everything that you said except the menus sucked. So this isn't like one of my favorite games that was released this year, but this is an honorable mention that of a game that I truly enjoy at a very, very deep level that officially launched this year, and that's Satisfactory. So Satisfactory 1.0 came out. It's been in early access for the past like 3 or 4 years. I've been playing it on and off for that, but yeah, it's a great game. They released a bunch of the devs over at Coffee Stain have done a really great job for Satisfactory. The 1.0 launch had a lot of new and interesting gameplay things to it. They made the game more fun and interesting, in my opinion, by adding a lot of new features to things that have just been in the game forever that literally did nothing. And now they actually do things, and it's quite fun. I had a lot of fun with Satisfactory. It's good.
For my honorable mentions, yes, definitely Echoes of Wisdom is there. I really wish I could have fit it in my ballot somewhere, but like again, like there's just so many games that I really like this year. Shadow Generations 2 was a big one. I wish I could have honestly put Astrobot in more categories, but I couldn't. And another big one for me was Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. I really enjoyed that game. And Ubisoft is a mess of a company right now, but somehow like they were able to make one good game this year, and it's like the smallest, lowest budget game that they put out. That game is really a solid Metroidvania and a really great Prince of Persia game. And it's a shame not enough people played it, but they canceled like any plans they had for a sequel or anything like that, and the team's been redistributed, and like it was a whole thing like a few months ago. They talked about the studio, and for me, like last year was Sea of Stars that I really liked, and I just wish I could have put it in things, but like I think Prince of Persia is probably like the one that like slightly missed out on a lot of categories. But yeah, so on to the final award of the night, the Game of the Year award, and I think I'll start because it's probably no surprise to anybody, but it's Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I was anticipating this game literally since the moment it was announced. And a lot of games that I anticipate don't end up being great, as we've talked about earlier. But somehow, Todd Howard and the staff at Machine Games were able to create what I legitimately think is a masterpiece of a video game. It was both what I wanted and something unexpected at the exact same time. Like the gameplay had a lot of stealth, which when I first heard about it, I was a little bit not sold on it, but it makes sense because without getting into story spoilers, like you obviously don't want to be caught in fascist Italy by fascist people when you're not that, or when you're in the jungle and you don't want to be caught by those same people. Like it makes sense for the story of the game. And the story of the game really propelled this game forward for me. Like the gameplay and particularly the menus, it's like very similar to Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, and like Zelda, modern Zelda games where like the menus could have been a little more simplified, but just the story, world building, and the pacing of the game was fantastic too. And it really just hit every expectation I had for it and surprised me in ways I never thought I would be surprised in with a video game. It's a shame that like Xbox is in such a terrible place. If they were in a better place, this could have been a really key exclusive to bring people to their platform. But now everything's in Xbox these days, as Microsoft says. And like this game, if you don't have an Xbox or PC, you can play it on PS5 spring next year. Like Gino was saying earlier with Tomb Raider and Uncharted and whatever, like Indiana Jones is the best like globe-trotting adventure game that I've ever played. It's that good. And like I was even talking to our friend Phil, who I would like to have on the show one day. I think he'd be great.
Yeah.
About this game, and he loves Machine Games as well. He loves the Chronicles of Riddick game from the 360 era that has a lot of DNA in this game. I'm like, this is a Phil game, and like, I know he would enjoy it. Low key, like the simplest things of like the way the lighting works in this game is astounding. Like you're in a tent and you can see the light shine through the cloths of the tent, and it comes in and you see like the different colors of like the fabrics of the tent. Or when you're in the tent, you stand in front of a candle and you can walk all the way around the candle, and Indiana Jones's shadow is perfectly shown no matter what direction you're facing. Like
it doesn't look weird.
The technical prowess of Machine Games was really shown off, and like the new things I've never experienced ray tracing in a game that way. Like ray tracing low-key was like a stupid buzzword I thought before, like, oh, who cares, but like, no, it actually was something that enhanced my experience in this game. I didn't even talk about the music. I know I didn't nominate it, but it sounds like John Williams composed the score of this game, because whoever the composer is, I'm sorry, I don't know who it was off the top of my head. Maybe I'll shout them out here. Perfectly mimicked the style of John Williams in this game. And the original pieces like are fantastic in this game too. Like the sense of adventure you get in this game is, in my opinion, just one of the best. It's not like a game like Breath of the Wild, like it's open world, you go where you want, but like the world is big. You go to multiple large environments in the game, and you can choose to do all the fieldwork side quests if you want. You could go into a building that is away from the main quest and solve these puzzles, these mysteries. Like the puzzle solving is
incredible. And the puzzles and mysteries tie into the main story.
Exactly. And so it always feels like you're accomplishing something in this game that matters. And it is not a 100+ hour game. It's like I beat the game and did all the side quests and most of the mysteries in the game in under 30 hours. And that is so refreshing for a game this day and age. It really respects your time as a player, and it deserves so much credit. And the game won't get that at the Game Awards next year if all these big games come out, like GTA or Metroid and whatever the heck else Nintendo has. And I'm sure I'm forgetting more games. But like this year, it could have really, really done well. And I fear it's just not going to get that credit. And I just cannot emphasize enough how special this game is. It's truly top of its class in a lot of ways. So
I was also going to say Indiana Jones for it as my game of the year too, Mateo. I just want to add one quick thing to it. And then I guess I can talk about what my personal favorite game of the year was. Mm-hmm. But Indiana Jones, playing that game felt like I was in a movie theater anytime I was mm-hmm. I was playing it. It was as good as Raiders, as good as The Last Crusade, mm-hmm. if not better. But if I'm really talking about it, Jules, I'm going to confuse you yet again, because my favorite game of the year is also PoE. PoE 2 is absolutely amazing. It is my favorite game of the year. It is my most anticipated game of the year. And yeah, it's just...
I feel like there should be rules here.
No, there should not be. Next year, we can have the Geno PoE 2 Award.
I think the voting jury needs to approve what is considered a game and what isn't a game.
In a year where we were the correct people in not allowing Shadow of the Air Tree in our Game Awards because of the expansion, I am shocked that PoE is nominated for one from the same person, most anticipated of 2025 and best game of 2024.
Well, he said favorite because he said Indiana Jones was the best, but he said his favorite. Yeah. So,
though, because like when Mateo was reading off the list to me as I was going for it, right, I wrote favorite game 2024 and I wrote PoE 2 without even blinking an eye. I wrote that down. He says, and then we're also going to do game of the year. I'm like, but I also like Indiana Jones. I literally just finished Indiana Jones like last night.
I mean, no surprise for me, mine is Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. I don't think I really need to elaborate on anything more from what I've said. I love the game. I love this series. I'm super pumped for part 3. Despite what people online like to say, like, it is very, very clear that the devs of this game have put their entire heart and soul into this series. Like, there's so much love, there's so much care, there's so much authenticity, and it's the right kind of remake. Like, I will kill on that hill that this game is the right way to do a remake. And remakes should not be just the same thing. This really is the best example of something enhanced and relived and recreated. And I'm just I'm in love with this project, so I'm very excited to see the conclusion in the next few years.
We were talking about when we were going to come back for a long time, and it feels right to come back with the Game of the Year show, and hopefully we can get back into a good rhythm. And I know for sure next year we're going to do this again, where we're going to stick it to Jeff Keighley and be like, look, you should do a Game Awards show that talks about the entire year, because next year the Game Awards again will be in December and it's going to have a November cutoff. So, and if it's no, next year is going to be as packed as we think it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of big games snubbed. Like this year alone, we talked about Indiana Jones was snubbed, Marvel Rivals was snubbed, Path of Exile 2 was snubbed. Like a lot of these games could have had nominations and didn't, and it's just not right. I really don't think that's right for the games media. Like it's literally the only major art form that does that, and that's the marquee show. I know there's a million other game awards that don't do that, but Jeff Keighley's show is the one that gets all the eyeballs. So
yep, the Jeffy's, yeah. 2025.
Anyways, that brings us to the end of today's episode. If you liked what you heard today, hit that like, subscribe, or follow button. If you want to tell us what your games of the year were this year, let us know in the comments, and let us know if you have any ideas for any upcoming episodes, or share your thought. We'll see you next time at the Hub World. Microsoft, make a new Banjo game.
And another Indiana Jones.
Yes, make another Indiana Jones. See you, everybody.